Well, welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Great to be with you in the studio today. We are continuing our discussion this week of children and diversity. How do you handle those situations when your child says something embarrassing in public like, Daddy, that person looks different than us, or he sounds funny when he talks? How do you handle those situations? That's what we're going to talk about this week as we look at cultural diversity and visit with a different culture each day this week. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for helping the show happen so that you can experience and benefit from all of our experts that we get to talk with each day here on Faith and Family. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuoam.org, go to the sponsor section and click on the logo for Concordia University, Wisconsin. It'll take you right to the website. You can learn all about them there. So how do we handle these situations? We've got some great guests lined up today to talk about cultural diversity. Joining us in the studio is Reverend Stanish Stanley, who recently moved his family to the United States from Mumbai, India. That's welcome, right. Pastor Stanley.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone is Eric and Erica Zwettler, calling from, they were so gracious and called in at 9:30 p.m., a bedtime for everybody else in their household. Eric and Erica calling from Karnataka, I believe, did I get that right? Karnataka, India? Welcome, Zwettler family.
Well, that's absolutely correct. Yes, thank you.
I mispronounced it on the promotional piece for today's show. Pastor Stanley made sure that I got it correct. So, thanks for joining us today, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
So, you packed up your family about 4 or 5 months ago. How long ago was that?
It's been about 3.5 months.
3.5 months. Packed up the whole Zwettler family and moved to southern India, all for Eric's job. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So you packed up the family, and let's talk about some of the questions that the kids had before you moved. We're going to talk about that in a section in just a second. Before we even get into that, I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation today. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, and you're calling from the St. Louis area, you can call it 314-821-0850. Outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us at 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email your questions at family@kfuo.org. So, Zwettler family, as you were considering the opportunity, where were you about a year ago? You were here in the United States, living in the Midwest, typical Midwest family, right?
Absolutely. Indianapolis.
And so the opportunity came up to move your family across the world, and you moved to southern India. And as you were preparing for that, what were some of the questions that your kids had? And how many kids do you have, and what are their ages? And tell us a little bit about them and then the questions they had.
We have three children, a 10-year-old boy named Wally, a 7-year-old boy named David, and a 4-year-old girl named Annika.
And what were some of the questions they had?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, for a while beforehand, we had been preparing to take them on a bit of an international jaunt to the home place of my place of work, so that would have been England. But as faith, if you will, instead of fate, would have it, we've been pushed to a completely different continent, but for seemingly good reason. They were as prepared as we could get them by ourselves for handling a new internationally flavored life. It's just a completely different life than our expectation, but apparently we've gotten fairly lucky, and I think through a lot of prayer and consideration, they were ready for almost anything, and they've taken it quite in stride.
I think a lot of the questions came up that were, they were wondering what kind of food they would be eating over here. And Wally and David, being a little bit older, I think had more questions about the people, and they were wondering, and as a parent, that was a hard question to hear them ask, was if their friends would remember them while they were gone. and you know, and if the people, how their family and friends would be when they came back, and just how their relationships might change while they're gone.
And I'm sure that that's common. Yeah, being older kids, that's certainly something that, that they would face. It's thinking about food and the big questions about food. Being an adult, that would probably be my big question, too. What kinds of foods am I going to get to eat while I'm there? Pastor Stanish, you packed. How long ago did you move your family from Mumbai here to the St. Louis area?
This happened four and a half years ago. 2008 September was the time when we came in. We had been in Mumbai for over a year with my family, because I was newly married and just 2 or 3 years. 5 years. Kathy and Kathy came in. She was, I think, around 3 when she arrived over here. So we had a much more different set of questions. It was more from Bina's side, my wife, and from my side that the questions really rose than from Kathy's side. So, yeah, so it's kind of different from what we see with the Svetla family, I think.
And you were in Mumbai, which is more the northern part of India. The Svetlers are in Karnataka, which is southern India. What are some of the differences between where you were in Mumbai and Karnataka? What are some of the differences that you would see culturally?
Many. In fact, one of the main things about India is that it is so complex and the variety is so pronounced. There is so much an offer over here that it's very difficult for a person coming from another culture to really get a grasp over what is happening. Some of the main differences would be, like, in Mumbai, which is on the northwestern coast of India, it is a large city with around 22 million people in it. It's more, the language is the main difference, really, because the language is Marathi. The spoken language of the state is Marathi, whereas in Karnataka, the spoken language of the state is Kannada. That is the language. So it's one of the languages belonging to the South Indian Dravidian family, whereas this is more of a North Indian, Western Indian flavor, number one. Number two would be just the way they would kind of interact with people. Maharashtrians a little more, I think both have similarities, but at the same time, Maharashtrians are a little more to themselves. They value their family in many ways. But also, the Kannadigas also are the same. There is no big difference there. But probably, like, let's say, the Kannadigas might see some people kind of wearing a lungi or that they wrap around their waist, whereas the North Indians, the Maharashtrians would be a little different in that sense. The dressing side would be a little different, which would be more of a pant, just like the pants that we wear over here. So that particular difference will be there. Also, the religion, some of the gods and goddesses that the Maharashtrians kind of worship will be a little different from the ones that the Kannadigas worship. So these would be some of the main things.
So even within India, you're going to see some pretty big diversity in terms of culture with clothes and language, interaction, and religion. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to language and talk with Eric. Eric, with your job, did you have to learn a new language to prepare for your work there?
Thankfully, no. One of the keys in working within the city of Bangalore, I believe it's still the largest city in Karnataka, is that it's heavily based in the IT industry. Mm-hmm. So, from the perspective of the people listening in the States, if you've ever called an IT service desk and you've received someone with an obvious Indian accent, there's a good chance that they're actually located within a few blocks of the building that I'm working in. So, there's been very little in the way of a language barrier other than complex words and the types of things you would expect with a non-native language. So they speak English quite well. We've not had any issues communicating with nearly anyone, even outside of the workplace.
So, Pastor Sainish, is English just as common in India as the other languages?
No, sadly, the answer is no. But yes, what Mr. Zwettler is saying is pretty right. Bangalore is one of those, because if you look at the topography of India, the southern parts, that is Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, Kerala, and these particular states, Karnataka being at the topmost of the southern states, it's almost moving into the north now and the western part of India. Karnataka has a very good English-speaking, South India predominantly speaks English and kind of is more attuned to the English kind of culture, more than the North. So Bangalore, for instance, as Sir is pointing out, is very much, it's very right. It's a very cosmopolitan city, but also it's more, in sync with, modern day India. The modern day India, what I speak about, is the multinational corporations driven India. And so the IT sector is heavily, heavily located over there. Also in Mumbai, we have a very strong IT sector over there too. But you would see Mumbai is not that proficient with its English, especially when you go out onto the roads and, you know, you start dealing with real simple, average Indians. Let's say you get into the rickshaw and you try to speak Hindi and English, and you would kind of run into some problems in Mumbai. But that would be the opposite if you are somewhere in Bangalore, where the rickshaw drivers also would at least communicate with you in English. So in that sense, it's a better place to be for the Western educated guy to really start off in India. Yeah. So English is not pan Indian. Mm-hmm. It is like, especially in the South, there is a much more stronger preference and presence of English speaking people. Yeah.
Erica, how has the transition gone so far, getting settled in? I know Eric has been pretty busy with work, and you've probably had your plate full with just getting everything settled in, getting everybody settled into school and those types of things. Tell us about that transition, how that's gone. How are the kids getting settled in with school and family life?
Well, school just started for them last Monday. Our fifth grader and our second grader have done, really well, and have made several friends at school already, and are really enjoying the sports that they are participating in. My daughter is the equivalent of American pre-K, and she's having a little bit harder time, mainly because we have a wonderful school back home, a Lutheran school. And last year she went to school two mornings a week for 3 hours. This year would have been only 3 days a week for 3 hours. But she has gone with the boys from about 7:45 in the morning until 4:45 in the afternoon, because she takes a 45-minute bus ride each way to school. And that has been a huge adjustment for her and for me. It's been very different not having any children with me during the day. Sad at times, but there's also, a nice little piece that goes with that at times, too. But little things like getting used to having a driver, having somebody who can, take you pretty much anywhere you want to go, except when Eric needs him. And in our home, we have our maid, Gita, who also cooks for us. 3 days a week, we get Indian food. And 2 days a week, I am teaching her American recipes. And it's been different having help. And it's nice, but at the same time, I have to talk her through things or explain things. And that's been an adjustment for me to not, just go and wash dishes. If they're dirty, I am expected to leave them alone, because if I try to do it, she will say, "I do it." And she comes in and starts working on it. So it's nice, but at the same time, it's just very different than what I'm used to. But here in the little community that we live in, the kids have made a lot of friends. And David, he's our 7-year-old back home, was our little bit more quiet child, he has just blossomed here. And he actually didn't even want to come to India. I remember him in April, getting ready to go into the first grade classroom, was just crying and screamed at me about 2 weeks before we were going to leave, that he said, "I'm not going to India," and was crying as he walked into his classroom. That was very hard. But here he's just, he's doing so well, and I never would have thought that it would be, you know, that it would even be possible. Even though I know we've had a lot of people praying for the adjustment back home and everything, albeit from home, praying for the adjustment here, he is definitely a case in point of the power of prayer.
Well, I'm glad that the transition has gone well for you. And it sounds like you have a lot of support. And it probably sounds like you're not in the typical, I'm guessing the situation that you have is probably not the typical family setting that most families in India would experience. Now, Pastor Standish, I'm guessing most families probably wouldn't have a driver and a maid.
Correct? That is true. Yeah.
So one of the, that would certainly be, I'm guessing, some of the perks that come with, you know, an American, having a job, being blessed with a great job and being able to move to India, that helps them make that transition a little bit more smoothly. So a typical family in India, I'm guessing you probably didn't have those types of services when you
That's
were
right.
there, but you, growing up there, you're familiar with the culture.
Right.
What, so Erica, you've had the chance now to kind of get settled in and getting to know some of the neighbors. And you said the kids are getting to know the neighbors and getting to know the community and really being well received. I know that you've had the opportunity just by following your fantastic pictures on Facebook, and I'm a little jealous, you've gotten to get out and do some sightseeing as well. What are some of the neat things that you've done? I have to say I was quite jealous when I saw the picture with the elephant.
That was in Mysore, and we went there at the beginning of July. That has probably been my favorite thing so far. The kids really loved the camel ride that they got to go on, and we went on an elephant ride as a family, which was a little bit more terrifying than I ever would have thought, but I kind of can say I did it, but I'm not sure I'm ever going to do it again. But let's see. The palace, I wish we'd been able to take pictures in the palace. It wasn't allowed, but it was so phenomenal to see. Oh, like this marble, and I'm trying to get the other materials that they use, but just things that back home are known to be very expensive, and it's really only like the higher society has it at home, and mm-hmm. It was just all over inside this palace. From what I've seen of India back home, I never would have thought I would have found that here. Just these beautifully sculptured temples, and I mean, some of the just the artistic beauty was phenomenal. And I don't know, it's a lot greener here than I would have thought. And I would really love going on walks around here and just looking at the palm trees, and the flowers here are just very, very different than back home. It's by far more beautiful than we hear about back home. We have some other trips planned, but this weekend we are going to Chennai and Pondicherry, so I look forward to seeing what that is, because that will involve getting to see the Bay of Bengal. But we've been to this place called Bannerghatta National Forest. We went on a safari. We saw a white tiger that walked right next to our Jeep, a huge black bear. Just things that you wouldn't get to necessarily do that easily back home.
Well, and to jump in on the end of that, during our stay at the zoo that she was just mentioning, and the wildlife park behind it, the Jeep ride to the wildlife park literally put a Jeep, standard old-fashioned, I would say 1960s era Jeep Wrangler, with its old manual windows between you and a multiple hundred-pound killing machine. So it's not something that you would ever be able to experience in the U.S., largely due to the litigious nature of the society. I mean, no one in their right mind would climb into a Jeep and go through with that if they didn't know but there is some small chance that you're actually not going to go home.
Yet you did it.
In the U.S., however, you would likely see bars in an upscaled vehicle such that you as a patron of the park were nearly insulated from everything around you, and it would be very difficult to understand or really view the power and true majesty of all the different animals and plants that are out there to behold.
Interesting. Yet you got in the Jeep and you rode right next to the man-eating beast. Pastor Stanley, Pastor Stanley, have you, is that typical in life in India? Do you ride elephants everywhere? Obviously, they get to be tourists for, right, you know, for a long time. Have you seen white tigers? Did you get to ride elephants?
Oh, no. I'm kind of envious of these guys now. But anyway, to be very frank, this is quite different from average India. And average India is more concerned with their own things, you know. It's a day-to-day survival kind of a struggle that they have. In the past 10, 15 years, things have changed in India. Economic development has come in a very big way, especially with the liberalization of the economy somewhere in the mid-90s. And that has changed. And one of the main areas that has benefited from the economic liberalization has been Bangalore. And for that matter, Mumbai also. Hyderabad is another one. And down in the up in the north, there is Delhi, which is Delhi, Gurgaon, and all these kind of cities. But for average India, even today, it is still a way to kind of get through to the to a point where they can make their family's life secure, especially the future of their kids is uppermost in the minds of the average Indian family. And I'm sure that will be the case even for any Western family too. When ma'am did point about her visit to the Mysore Palace and to the national park and all that, I have to keep bring one thing out to the common listener, and that is that India always was a rich country, and that was one of the reasons why it was always kind of attacked by somebody or the other coming down from either from the western side across the Afghan mountains or from Central Asia, you know, and or for that matter from the Greek side of our world, but the reason being that There were these big stories about so much wealth which is there in all these big temples and all these palaces that the kings were kind of having, and that always kind of put people in awe of India. Mm-hmm. Not only the culture, but also the enormous prosperity and wealth that was out there. And some of these things are what the Zwettler family is kind of witnessing, of course, after all that wealth has been taken away by either the Britishers or by the invaders. But having said all that, it is also true that our wealth today lies in the culture also, the culture that we have. It's kind of different. And I'm sure that the American family kind of feels it that way, that there is so much of difference from a normal American setting to a average Indian setting, where you find people kind of all over the place, mm-hmm. where it's kind of a totally different way of and lifestyle, style of living, you know. So, for us, growing up, no elephants and no tigers and no lions, but we were pretty happy walking to our way to school and coming back. We used a lot of public transportation, like trains and buses, and that was about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
All good stuff. We've got to take a short break here, but when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about some of the similarities and differences between the cultures, between Indian culture and American culture. I guess for the Zwettler family, it'd be between Indianapolis and India. So when we come back from a break, we'll talk more about that right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
I've been an outspoken critic of Pat Robertson when he disparaged international adoption and when he said it's okay for a husband to abandon his wife with Alzheimer's so long as she's in a nursing home. Now, this TV evangelist says contraception's an important part of humanity because it prevents the birth of too many Appalachian ragamuffins. Mr. Robertson and Planned Parenthood have something in common. Neither wants poor people populating America, but we call that eugenics. Second, Mr. Robertson said there's no sin associated with sex change operations, but all the cosmetic surgery in the world won't change the gender DNA God gave you at conception. A sex change operation is nothing more than elaborate homosexuality. I think it's time for Pat Robertson to retire.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Beautiful music is the art of the prophets and the gift of God, which can calm the agitations of the soul. Martin Luther said that, and here at KFUO Radio, we believe it. That's why we're now providing beautiful classical music and sacred classics online at classic99.com. It's our gift to you, 24 hours a day. Check us out, classic99.com, a musical ministry of KFUO Radio.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, the president of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Did you know it only takes a few words or a kind gesture to lift up someone in need of hearing the gospel? You can help LCMS Ministries concentrate on doing more and reaching more. With the Lutheran Church Extension Fund investment, you empower ministries with loans and resources that keep the mission moving forward. Investments directly benefit LCMS schools, congregations, care centers, universities, and international ministries. Visit lcef.org or call 800-843-5233.
The president of Justice Fellowship, a branch of Prison Fellowship Ministries, is welcoming Attorney General Eric Holder's proposals to reduce prison crowding by scaling back the use of harsh sentences for certain drug-related crimes. Craig DeRoche says,
people are exposed to sexual predators in prison, drugs and alcohol, violence. Many of them in there for bouncing a bad check or being addicted to drugs, being exposed to things that turn them into a hardened criminal.
Holder said he favors diverting low-level offenders who aren't connected to gangs or cartels to drug treatment and community service programs. DeRoche says faith-based programs like those sponsored by Prison Fellowship are among the most effective.
It's a miracle to see God's power in each of these individuals, and I believe that what the Attorney General is advocating will be advancing faith-based initiatives in the criminal justice system.
Holder also said he favors releasing some elderly nonviolent prisoners. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us today as we are delving into our week of cultural diversity and talking about an American family in India and an India family in America today. And we are talking with Eric and Erica Zwettler, who recently packed up their family and moved to southern India, and talking with Pastor Stanish Stanley here in the studio today, who a few years ago moved his family from India to the St. Louis area here in the U.S. And before we went to break, we were talking about, just briefly touching on some of the differences, and I'd like to talk about, Eric brought up a good point that, about some of the differences, things that could happen in India that just never would happen in American society, in American culture, because we're quite often so litigious. And I would even say American culture is very individualistic. Pastor Stanley, would you describe Indian culture as individualistic or more community oriented?
No way. There is no chance for it to be individualistic. It is very community-oriented, and it is very much driven by families, by the network of friends that you have, by the network of people whom you meet in your everyday life. And that is as far as you can go with your individualism, that your individualism has to be shaped and formed within the community life that you are a part and parcel of. So when you look at a Hindu society, it is mainly driven, and it is structured around the family. It is structured around the fact that you have not only parents, but you have your parents' parents. You have your parents' relatives. You have your uncles, aunties, and your grandpas, grandmas, everybody put in together. And you've got to respect them. So there's a lot of reverence within our cultures. There is a kind of a reverence towards people who belong to your family. Sometimes it is sad to note that these things don't kind of automatically translate onto probably people who do not belong to your family. So, you know, the caste system in India is such a big problem because of that. And especially if you don't belong to the same caste, then that kind of plays in your mind, and it kind of structures your behavior patterns towards others. Of course, that's where I found these Wetler families' experiences so nice, and I personally feel that that's a good sign that the people over there are so welcoming of the Svetlas, and it is always going to be there because India is known to be a very generous culture with it, especially with people, you know. Mm-hmm. And if they are people from the white side of the world, let's say the western side, which we till now understood it as the white side, the respect and the love for them is a little more pronounced, especially amongst common people. It could be mainly because of British rule over India for over 175 years. It also, especially within the Christian community, is more pronounced, especially because of the work done by the missionaries, you know, the educational systems, the contribution that Christian missions have done in the field of education, in the field of healthcare, in the field of transforming lives of people just by changing thought patterns has been enormous. And even though Indian Christianity is just 2.3% of the population, the contributions that they've made is over 50% just with the small community, especially during the British period. So all those things kind of play into the minds of the common folks. And in most cases, if you see a white person, the general perception within the Hindu mindset is, or Indian mindset is, that, hey, this guy is Christian. Or this lady is Christian. And they're kind of pretty surprised when they see a lot of these white folks kind of getting into these big ashrams and, you know, doing their Hindu yoga stuff and all. They're confused. But at the same time, the perception has kind of stuck. But there is also another India which kind of tries to define Indianness with Hinduism. And that is the BJP side, which the political side of it is the Bharatiya Janata Party, which was in power in Karnataka, where the Svetlas have moved in, just until, I think, 6 months. It was just 4 or 5 months before earlier that government was thrown out by, and the centrist government has come in, the secularists have come in to power in Karnataka. Mm-hmm. So they've moved in at a pretty good time for themselves, I would say. At least politically, they are on the right side. They have a much more... what do you say, appreciative government, probably, which they will find. But having said that, digress from your original question?
No, but you take me to a good question. Eric, I want to ask, as a Caucasian family moving to southern India, would you say that, just as Pastor Stanish pointed out, that quite often it would just be assumed because you were a quote unquote white family in India that you were Christian? Has that been the case? Did most people just assume that because you were a Caucasian family from the U.S. that you were a Christian family?
I would love to say the answer to that is yes, but unfortunately, we've been preceded by quite a few families who largely are of the jet-setting mentality. That is to say, they've traveled the world, they're fairly well off by themselves, they may not even be here on business, And they've brought an interesting element, and that is the largely, I dare say, nearly atheistic side of the Caucasian society here with them. So it's very tentative in the way that religion is approached, especially with me, even outside of work. People are very hesitant to commit whether I ought to be Christian or I ought to be non-theistic at all.
Would you say that when we were talking about individualistic, you know, the American individualistic way of life, that everything is about me and everything revolves around me, and how that's so very different in India, and households are very intergenerational, as Pastor Stanley was saying, that, you know, your in-laws or your mother and everybody else lives all together. Would you say that most of the families around you are living that? Are very intergenerational households, and that maybe your household is a little bit different because you don't have those generations with you?
I think the simple answer to that question, quite frankly, is the people who are here as expatriates, also called expats, are largely in the atomic household fashion. That is to say, they've got a set of parents and whatever immediate children, and that's all. However, the local, the people who actually live here, as it were, the Indians that live within our community, they typically have 2 to 3 generations, just as Pastor Stanley was mentioning. It's not uncommon at all. And going back home, we are somewhat uncommon in that we're closer to the multi-generational household than most Americans would be.
Mm-hmm. So in that culture, several generations play an important role in family life. I would guess, having some of the nice things that they have by having just having a maid, I'm sure can help fill some of those voids that normally would happen in an Indian family. Having someone to help pass on those traditions, those household traditions, those family traditions. Do you see that as a possibility, Pastor?
Oh, yes, yeah. In fact, I must say that, yeah, what the Zwettlers are bringing is an important corrective, and I should have mentioned it before. India is changing fast, and it is changing especially driven by Western ideas and Western education. Okay, especially in the cities, you will find a lot of nuclear families, and that is what the Zwettlers are pointing out to us. In the villages, you will find a little more of a holding on to traditional values, traditional families, joint family system, especially within the Hindu unit. And as you pointed out, yes, it is. It is difficult, really, to make a distinction as to whether the maid really fulfills the role over here of the non-being mm-hmm. of the grandfather and grandmother, for instance. Let's take it that way. In fact, traditionally, what has happened is within the Indian system, the understanding is that the family within a Hindu family. What will happen is the grandfather and the grandmother, especially the grandmother, plays the important role of telling stories. She is supposed to be the one who will be the one who will instill those values of, the godly values, the Hindu godly values, through their mythological stories that they kind of try to, instill, tell the kids, so that they get those nice moral values, those nice Hindu moral values within them. Things are changing now. Probably, in many cases, the maid does not really play that much of a role, especially in doing this job. Mm-hmm. She is more of a help around the house. She does definitely play the role of taking care of the kids when the parents, if, for instance, let's say both the parents are working, as might be the case in many families now, especially in the cities, who are pretty affluent Hindu families. But probably within a Western culture, probably the maid kind of reads books and this and that, you mm-hmm. see. That is not the case within an Indian setup, because mainly because maids within the Indian society till now were drawn from those classes who were not well educated.
Mm-hmm.
So literacy was a problem. They were mainly protectors of the kids who would, you know, take care of the kids, tend to the kids' needs, and also cook in the house. So those are important functions that they perform. So there's a little bit of a difference between a Western society family who has a maid and, let's say, what the expectations are from an Indian maid.
I'd like to talk a little bit about religion. You've brought up Hinduism and I'm sure for the Zwettler family, moving into a new culture, the city that you're in, I'm gathering is a little more diverse. And I know, as I understand it, Southern India is certainly more receptive to Christianity. That's is more Christianized, I guess.
Yes.
You would.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Eric and Erica, you've been able to find a church there, and Pastor Stanley, you serve as a pastor in the
Mumbai
in the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. How, Eric or Erica, what do your kids experience in terms of in their daily conversations with others at school? Are most of their friends Christian, or are they interacting with children that are primarily from Hindu families?
I think they're probably actually about a half and half, because there are some Indian children that are lucky enough to get to go to their international school, and most of the Indian children are Hindu. So they are finding out some about the Hindu religion, but I do know that they are talking about the fact that they are Christian with the Hindu children. And then some of the other expatriate kids, I'm not exactly sure how many of them go to church, but I do know that some of them do because I'm getting to know their moms. And but a lot of them go to
non-denominational
church. And so I'm thankful that they're getting to talk to other Christian kids here, but I'm not exactly sure how close it is to being Lutheran, how close it is to what they're used to hearing back home.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And what...
Well, like,
go ahead, Eric.
Sorry. Going a little bit beyond that, we've actually been attending a Church of South India congregation. And I'm sure actually Pastor Stanley will know more about the church than we do, having only been here for a couple, 3 months now. But it seems largely that it's a conglomeration of a number of different Protestant denominations that have banded together for financial and other reasons and set up congregations in the area. The one that we've been attending seems to be very close to a Presbyterian style, which, although quite different, is still, I'll say, slightly more comfortable than attending, dare I say, Roman Catholic, which we had first fallen on being the closest congregation to our house. We've identified a couple of locations for Lutheran churches that have been thus far unable to actually find when or where the services are held. So to that end, it's really indicative of the behind-the-scenes nature of the Christian church in this area as a whole. Going online in the States, we can find nearly any information we want about any congregation anywhere, at least to the point that we could show up there at the time of the service and meet enough people to feel welcome. Here, it's quite popular that you can find all the locations of the various temples for the, you know, dedicated to one, and I'm going to sound horrible when I say this, dedicated to one Hindu god or another, but it's very difficult to to find information on specific churches in the area that practice Christianity.
Good point, Pastor's grinning from ear to ear. I'm gathering that's your experience as well. What is it like to be a Lutheran in India, Pastor Stanley?
Oh yeah, it's well, I really appreciate sir for bringing that out. Probably we should do a better job in getting out there and making ourselves more visible. But yes, as I pointed out earlier, we are a minority in India, and you know, and that kind of is seen in on the ground when you really go out and see so many temples out there, or even online, and you don't see the same thing with regard to the Christian churches. But Lutherans are pretty much. I have a good presence in Bangalore. In fact, there are at least two Lutheran churches. One is the Tamil Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is more belonging to the Danish, Swedish, German kind of tradition. And of course, the IELC, the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is the LCMS tradition. But our churches are more Tamil speaking. Both the churches are Tamil speaking, which is basically the state just below Karnataka on the northeastern, on the southeastern side. So we have English worships, definitely, but I'm sure you wouldn't find the big crowds which the Zwettler family is finding in the Church of South India. And I must appreciate him for getting his history and facts right, because, the Church of South India basically belongs to the Calvinistic Reformed tradition. It is a conglomerate of many missions, like, for example, the London Mission Society, which was more congregational. You have the Anglican Mission, which was, again, another mission which worked, the Baptists, the Wesleyan Methodists, or many other kind of missions which worked in the southern part of India, then finally came together for the reasons that he definitely rightly pointed out to form the Church of South India, and that is the largest church in India. So theology-wise, they are more Reformed than Lutheran, of course, the Lutheran presence in that sense is quite minimal. It is more located around the eastern coast of India, southeastern coasts of India. So, but if they were to find out a Lutheran church, they wouldn't have a problem. They should be able to get it, maybe by word of mouth rather than through online possibilities. One possible place to go, I would advise, is the United Theological College near Bangalore Cantonment area, which is a little further away from Whitefield where they stay. That is a place where they could definitely make a beginning and see.
Eric brought up a really good point that here in the United States, you want to find a church, any denomination or non-denominational church, and you're looking for it. All you have to do is go on the web. You just go on your phone and your iPad or on the internet, on a computer, anywhere, and you can find what service they have, what types of service. They have four different types of services, and they're at this different, you know, this time and this time and this time. You can find that on the web. Not the case for the, you know, that they've experienced, and obviously you're affirming that that's not the case. It's just not going to be publicized all over the place. Right. It's through word of mouth. So how do you find the other Christians who confess the same as you, so that you can gather together to receive the gifts of God? That's just got to be challenging and something that we take for granted here in the States, I'm sure.
That is correct. No, that's as I said, that is probably, we are not that tech savvy as let's say the Hindus are. The Hindu community has done a far better job really putting themselves out there, and they do it with the temples, with their communities, with their gurus and everything. And I find that surprising that we, who are supposed to be the more literate and educated group within the minorities, at least, and for that matter, compared to the Hindus, the Christians of India are more educated. They have not been able to really publicize it as let's say the Hindus have been able to do. So that's something where probably maybe the Christians might be working in that direction, I'm sure.
And why is it that they can't publicize it? Is it for out of fear? Is it out of lack of resources? Is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It could be both. It could be lack of resources, but But at the same time, I wouldn't be completely doing justice in saying that it's lack of resources, because there's a lot of money coming in definitely for the churches, especially from the West. And even though the fundings have gone down quite a lot, yes, but still, they should be able to do it. But I guess probably they've not been smart enough. But also there is the other side, and that is the fear factor also, definitely, because especially when you talk about a small Pentecostal church within the villages of India, they'd like to keep it as quiet as possible, so that probably, you know, some kind of attack or something wouldn't happen to them. So they kind of try to be as smart as possible, and try to hold on and try to keep it quiet so that things are safe. That is definitely one of the ways they look at it. Yeah, that's also there
to keep it safe. I'd like to talk briefly about, I know we've just got a couple of minutes left, but what as a family moving from India to the United States, especially here in the Midwest, you know, many of the families are Caucasian or African American, and what would be, you know, the goal of this week was to help parents teach their children about cultural diversity.
Right.
What would be some of the obvious things that, you know, a little child might notice a difference right away,
right,
between, you know, an American and someone from India? How do you respond to those too? How do you help parents with those situations?
Right. In fact, the answer to that would be, from my personal experience, what I found out is that I came over here in 2008 with my family, and I had just Kathy with me. She was 3 years old. So she did not really have many questions apart from saying, oh, where are we going? Where are we going to stay? And that was about it. But she kind of adjusted pretty well. And we were blessed to have a family who accepted us as a part of their family and allowed us to kind of stay in their house and feel comfortable here within the culture. So we kind of just gelled in pretty well, and we've been fine. But at the same time, as Kathy started going to school, she started asking questions about especially her skin color and why is it like this. And I'm sure those questions might be there also for the Zwettler family, and they might be answering those questions to their kids too. The approach that I took is to point out that, see, we are created by God in His image and likeness, and I've used the Genesis, you know, initial chapters to really drive home that point to my kids, and to remind them that we are all made different, but we are made different and unique in the sense because we are created in the image and likeness of God. So everybody is there, everybody is different, everybody has been given their own potentials and talents, but what we have is, you know, what we are called to do is to go out and witness to that uniqueness that God has created in me, and also to appreciate the uniqueness that God has given to somebody else. So it's a kind of a slow process. It needs a lot of patience, like listening out what are the concerns of the child, and also probably drumming in the point that you need to focus on your foundations. It is not a question, of course, it is always, if you know who you are, what your identity is, then that makes it much more easier to understand the identity of somebody else. And that means you are much more open-minded to understand that there are different cultures and different people and different languages, and that's how God created this world with all its diversity. And we need to celebrate that diversity and cultural difference that God Himself has created.
To the Zwettler family, have you, with about 30 seconds left, have you seen that cultural diversity? Have your kids been learning from it?
They are learning it. They've had some really interesting experiences being the white kids here. We've gone out in public places, actually. A lot of families, a lot of Indian families, like to have their pictures taken with the children because they're pretty much blonde hair, blue-eyed. And that took some getting used to. But, I don't know. They're getting very used to being different, but also realizing that they're children, and the children that live here, they all really just want the same thing. They all want to play outside. They're just kids, and ultimately they find a common ground.
Wonderful.
They find a common ground.
Well, thank you so much to Eric and Erica Zwettler for joining us from Southern India. Thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And Pastor Stanley, thanks for joining us here in the studio. It's been good having you with us.
Thank you very much, sir.
Next time on Faith and Family, we'll continue our discussion on cultural diversity. Stick around for Moments of Assurance right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.